We're talking with Fred Upton, the congressman from St. Joseph, who knows a thing or two about the medical field and drugs. We had a chance to chat last week about his 21st century drug and health care initiative, and a situation here in Holland involving Model Drug and the fact that they are closing as a drugstore, become strictly a gift store. And quoting the Facebook posting by the owner, and I'll say it in quotes, "Unfortunately, with current insurance reimbursement levels, it no longer makes sense to continue on as a pharmacy. And surprising as it sounds, even with a high price of prescriptions, we, the Model Drug, often lost money on hundreds of prescriptions because of the insurance reimbursement. This is a problem that really goes beyond perhaps Obamacare, goes to the root level of making health care affordable, something that the 21st century initiative that you are behind perhaps is going to deal with, but the mom-and-pop pharmacist may not be around to enjoy the benefits once it becomes enacted."
Well, our role on the 21st Century Cures effort, which is going to take certainly the balance of the year and the end of next year, our goal there is to expedite the approval of drugs and devices using our research abilities with our universities, the FDA, the National Institutes of Health, the disease groups, to really foster a better climate to pursue life-saving drugs, solving the cures, and ultimately, obviously, keeping jobs here in this country as well. This particular drugstore in Holland, actually, its story is not unusual. There are a number of other smaller pharmacies, in essence what we call mom-and-pop pharmacies, across the country that have found it very difficult to compete with what's called the Part D program under Medicare, where you've got the larger pharmacies, the Walgreens, the CVS, the Rite Aids, they're able to compete and, because of volume, able to offer a lower price and thus a savings to the taxpayer. Remember, of course, that the Medicare pays a good share of that cost, and thus leaving many of these mom-and-pop stores unable to compete with that. And I think that's probably what this is. This is a regulation that came out by the administration that really precludes some of these very small pharmacies from competing. There's some interest to see if we can't fix that. I'm not sure what's going to happen because it is, as I understand it, a regulatory change that the Obama administration sought and is pursuing.
So really it's a case of, yeah, it might be eventually fixed, but again, you know, hopefully it'll be fixed before not all of them go become past tense, shall we say.
Yeah, that's right, and it's it is a concern, particularly, you know, we've heard from a number of pharmacies around the country, and it's obviously they have a client base here in Holland, and but many of this, you know, as we look at, you know, our congressional districts and think about our own family needs, obviously the smaller pharmacies, the family-owned ones have always had an important niche in our communities, and it's something that this regulatory change certainly does impact them as it pertains to their survivability.
We're talking with Congressman Fred Upton. I know this is not in your sphere of influence as chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee, but the situation involving the VA hospitals, the White House is standing by the internal investigation by the VA secretary over scheduling delays and the like, but there's more of a clamor, especially from Capitol Hill, to get to the bottom of this and maybe not accepting what the White House or the VA administration's explanations are at face value.
You know, there is no excuse to treat our veterans in this way. And what's most disturbing is that this problem has persisted for the last number of years and shows no sign of getting improved. And what's even worse is that now, just in recent days, it appears that there was a major cover-up out in Phoenix, but perhaps other places around the country. And that is just not right. Our veterans need our help. For me, I'll tell you, the easiest vote I have is in favor of veterans. It's a green light. It's a yes every single time. But for this to persist, sweeping studies under the rug, denying our veterans the proper care, is really inexcusable. And I know that we in the House passed a major veterans appropriation bill just a couple of weeks ago, passed overwhelmingly in the House. I want to say only a couple people voted against it. More money to help our vets. But I'll tell you, I know the chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee well. Of course, we have a member from Michigan on that committee. Dan Benichek up in the UP is on there. They're trying to subpoena documents from the VA to really get to the bottom of this. But there should be no greater cause for the VA than get this solved. We've seen years of excuses, and frankly, I think it's time for heads to roll.
Yeah, and this is just, you add this to what has gone on with some of the other things that have gone on with this administration, and you just scratch your head more than anything else.
Well, if anything, the leader of the VA, General Chinesky, these problems have been there. Why aren't they solved? What is a higher priority than to take care of our veterans coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan or look at our greatest generation, Vietnam? I mean, all of that. There is no greater cause for them to get to the bottom of this. And now that we find out about a cover-up, who knew what when? This is not right.
We're talking with St. Joseph Congressman Fred Upton, a proponent, outspoken proponent of the Keystone XL pipeline. Republicans in the Senate basically blocked a measure that would have pushed forward a pipeline. At least that's the initial reports we're getting. But yet, let's just say it was more partisan politics in the upper chamber. I know, again, it's the upper chamber. It's not you directly in the House. But still, it's just another roadblock for getting this pipeline in. We've talked about this before, about more delays, and the Canadians' patience can't be extended forever.
Well, what's troubling with this issue is it's been more than 2,000 days. I mean, I think we're literally coming up on 6 years this fall for a decision to be made. It's my understanding that in the Senate, Harry Reid, the majority leader, did not want an open and shut door amendment that was binding on Keystone. There was another energy bill that was pending. Frankly, in the House, we passed a good number of bills, particularly relating to energy conservation for buildings and schools, a whole number of different things, strongly bipartisan, and yet no action takes place in the Senate. And it's my understanding that Senator Reid tried to block a Keystone Amendment being added to it. It is germane. It is energy-related. And, you look at these terrible consequences that could occur because of what is happening elsewhere in the world, Nigeria. Our hearts bleed for these girls that have been kidnapped, and but we know that government is somewhat unstable. Lots of problems over there. You look at Venezuela, the same thing. Guess what? Both of these nations are major suppliers of oil to our nation. What happens if that unrest bubbles up to even be more troubling? Why shouldn't we rely more on Canada, our best friend, who already sends 1.5 million barrels every day of oil sands, oil to be refined here in the U.S. To try and offset what comes from some of these unstable countries. The votes are pretty clear. Keystone has been a bipartisan effort from the get-go, certainly in the House. Last year there was a non-binding amendment on Keystone that had 62 votes in the Senate. But all of a sudden, as you try to make it binding, the effort in the Senate blocks all action altogether and shows part of the dysfunction that body has. We need to get this thing done. The studies show that we can create tens of thousands of jobs in this country, and you're right, at some point Canada is going to say, you know what, we're going to send it all someplace else. China would love to have it. They can build the pipeline to circumvent the U.S., and we won't get it at all, and that would be a tragic mistake.
We're talking with Fred Upton. One final thing, and I'm not certain how much you are familiar with this particular story. It just came over the wires today. A bill making its way through the House that says if members of the military have to fly coach, then so should members of Congress. The bill's authors believe taxpayers deserve a break during these tough economic times, and politicians can set a better example. The measure does allow for some exceptions to the first-class rule, such as congressional members with a disability or other significant medical issues. It was introduced on Monday by a bipartisan group of lawmakers from Arizona, California, Georgia, and North Carolina. You and your colleague from Zealand, Bill Heisinger, do make the trip from West Michigan to Washington on a weekly basis. Coach travel, no problem, or is this more of a symbolic gesture than anything else?
Well, we all need to tighten our belts. It needs to start with Congress. I voted to cut Congress's budget each of the last couple years, and the good news is that we're actually spending less money this year than last and less again than the year before. All of our budgets are open for inspection for me, and I travel back and forth virtually every weekend. I don't think I've yet to pay for a first-class ticket. It's always coach. Usually Delta or American, sometimes United. It all depends where my car is. But the taxpayers pay for coach travel for Fred Upton each and every time. I've got a budget that I need to live with, and I'm not going to be paying for first-class travel. It's always coach. And I think members, my 434 colleagues, they all need to examine their own budgets. Actually, for the last forever, there's not been a year. Every year, I actually return money back to the Treasury. I don't spend my full allocation. I can remember early on when I went to Congress, it used to be if you didn't spend your money, it went to someone who overspent theirs. Well, the good news is we changed that. Actually, an Upton Amendment helped change that, and now the money that we don't spend goes back to the Treasury. But I got to tell you, I don't think any member ought to be paying for first-class travel out of their own office budget. For me, it's coach, and it'll continue to be so with or without legislation.
Along those lines, have you ever run into a constituent on the flights to or from Washington, and you sort of get a feel for what maybe the people in the district are thinking about things? Do you get a chance to get questioned and or ask questions of constituents on these flights?
Oh, absolutely. I show up at the airport at least 30 or 40 minutes before the plane takes off. So I see folks in Grand Rapids or Kalamazoo or South Bend, and often there are many folks that are making that continued jaunt to D.C. So you always need a smile. you don't need to be grumpy. I try to give a pat to those that are serving in our armed services, a pat on the back as I see them. Thank you for your service. But I'm a recognizable face, and I appreciate questions and comments. It's another part of my job.
It's aerial office hours for Congressman Fred Upton.
That's right.
Anything else.
That's right.
Fred Upton, as always, we appreciate your thoughts about some of the issues of the day, some of the things that under your purveyance as the chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee and issues involving West Michigan. Wish you and your family well this coming week, and look forward to talking with you again next week.
You bet.